first, when you first elected as a member of Legislative Assembly?
1956.
And when did you become Minister of Municipal Affairs?
64.
What were some of the programs going on then, federal and provincial, for housing and urban assistance?
Well, most of them were involved with the sort of slum clearance. Almost all of them were in the city of Vancouver, mm-hmm. where the idea was to knock down the buildings, the bulldozer effect, and the other municipalities had not gone into any form of public housing. Almost all of it was associated with Vancouver's own urban renewal program.
For any programs to be initiated, would the first move come from the city? Or
they always did. Yeah, and they still did. But when I became minister in 1964, I said, except for those projects which were already in the pipe, mm-hmm. that I was not going to support the kind of association of housing with urban renewal, because all you did was raise some blocks and then tried to put them back together again. I came out strongly for dispersal, and that's why some of the other municipalities started to go into the housing business.
What did you think of Paul Hellyer and his task force?
I felt that he had a good idea in terms of going around the country and very quickly getting a feeling for his portfolio. He did it almost immediately on becoming minister, mm-hmm. and having done it, when he got the reading, and he was personally along with many of the meetings that were held, he recognized that some of the earlier approaches, not only to housing per se, but mm-hmm. urban renewal and its very close connection between urban renewal and housing, was the wrong way to go. And when he went back, of course, he had difficulty with his cabinet, I suspect, and mm-hmm. was not able to carry out some of the things he'd learned along the way.
Were there any expectations on the federal side when, after Hellyer resigned and Andrus became minister? Were you expect anything then? Or?
No, because what had happened was that obviously there had been a task force, and they had indicated that they wished to take certain changes of direction. When Mr. Andrus took over, in effect what happened was that there was a sort of wait-see for quite a period of time, and we kept repeating, for example, to Mr. Andrus the idea of dispersal of housing, experiments with different housing forms, this kind of thing, but we never could get the button pushed because there was, in his own view, there were so many things in the pipeline. He still had lots of urban renewal to do and all this kind of thing, and we always felt that was wrong. If we were ready to go, as we were, we felt, and we tried, as a matter of fact, I as minister said, well, you give us a global amount of money for a year and we'll determine how it should be spent here.
Mm-hmm. When did you first focus in on Strathcona?
Well, in both Strathcona and the Strathcona project and the Britannia project were very similar in many ways, because at the time, the city of Vancouver seemed to be hung up, and some of you will remember, maybe, that I wrote a number of letters to the city of city council of Vancouver and said, now look, get on with it.
Were you acquainted with Strathcona before you became minister? Before you came?
No, but I could see that it was really a part of the old urban renewal.
What did you see there in relation to housing conditions and the people, the kind of people?
Well, my feeling was that what had happened was somebody decided that urban renewal was a good thing, let's have some, because of federal dollars being available. So they went out with the bulldozers, not taking any regard for any possibility of renovation, any possibility of urban renewal, not with a bulldozer, but with a paintbrush.
Were there, at that time when you did become minister and focus in, what would you say were the area representations, organizations or persons who
were spokesmen? Well, they weren't really. There wasn't really anything at that point in time. There was the initiative that was presumably still there with the Vancouver City Council and its planning department. Essentially, it was with the planning department, but it was planning from the top down.
I meant in relation to, say, the local level. Were there any Chinese
organizations? No, it was very little. Very little. I think there were some concerned people involved in the community, but there was no for example, I don't recollect any specific representations to me until, in a formal way, until quite along in the piece. I mean, I'm a little hazy about dates here, but I think that's a fact.
Robert Andrews paid his first visit to Vancouver on August 7th, 1969. That was for a banquet sponsored by Spolta. Were you there, or were you?
No, I wasn't at. I wasn't at the first one. I was at a meeting at the same time in that general time. That's right.
You sent a telegram on September 3rd to City Council proposing a four-level discussions concerning that area.
Right.
Why? What prompted you to do this?
Well, I felt that the only way to get the thing going, we were told that there was X number of dollars in this case for both Strathcona and Britannia, and that there was some indication that if we didn't get on with the work, we would not have the money. And I felt that if the money was available, let's find out at the community level how it could be best spent. Because it didn't mean our money was committed anyway.
And you proposed the fourth level in the citizens group.
That's right.
How did you view the citizens group then, SPOTA? Do you think it had adequate representation from the community?
I wasn't too familiar with them. All I felt was that, first of all, there was a three-way partnership in any event, which was really a mechanical and administrative and financial partnership. So I instructed my deputy, who was Mr. Edward Brown, to directly meet with the community involved, and I gave him quite specific instructions that he was to make sure that anything that our end of the partnership did, which was a provincial end, would be done in consultation with Spolta. That's really where Mr. Brown came into the picture, and that's why he came.
What would have been Andrew's role as you were proposing this, his position as you were proposing this four-level discussion? Would he have proposed this if you had not? Or?
Well, he may have. I don't know. I really couldn't say.
And also,
mind you, by this time in British Columbia, we had done something that had not been done anywhere else. We had established this BC Housing Management Commission with one from a city, one from the federal government, one from the provincial government, which was the sort of a troika, three-man effort. And I said, well, if you've got three legs on the stool, Mr. Brown, why not get the fourth, and why shouldn't they all be part of the project?
Was there a liaison with this area to you, say, from Mr. Capozzi or Wolf?
Yes, they certainly felt that there was better ways of doing this, but by this time I was convinced that the only way to get if you were going to redo the neighborhood, then you had to redo it not with three, but with four.
So that's your telegram.
That's right.
Pretty got things going. What were your goals then for this, which work out of the Strathcona Working Committee?
Well, first of all, I wanted to make sure that money was coordinated, and it seemed to take so long back and forth between the various levels that we had a meeting in the Bayshore Inn, as a matter of fact, with Mr. Andrus and the City of Vancouver, and I said, now look, let's get this show on the road, and let's establish a working committee so that this money can be effectively spent.
Were you thinking in terms specifically of some rehabilitation program at that time?
Yeah, that's right.
What would you say then did Andrus, his representative of King Zenong then, did you say they shared similar goals and expectations of the Strathcona?
I think they were willing to experiment, because by this time we'd had about 2 years of correspondence, because British Columbia had been pushing letters back and forth to the federal authorities that urban renewal, as they had known it, was not workable. And from our point of view, for example, my own deputy was instructed to go to Ottawa and say, now look, if you give a little lift to the infrastructure of a community, probably much will take place naturally. Why don't you try that instead of using a bulldozer?
What about the position of the city then? What could you perceive of their goals or how they went into the Strathcona?
Well, I always strongly suspected that they were locked into a particular framework which had, you know, they had set it in motion, And, you know, how did they get off? How did they go somewhere else?
So they, can you say they went in as not as, how they didn't necessarily seem the same goals in the sense of thinking in terms of rehab, or?
I don't think they did at that time, no. I think
could,
they were...
Could you say, could we talk of the city in general, or would it be better to separate the aldermen from the...
Yeah, I think probably... Yes, I would say that you know, that here was a program, and it got locked into the bureaucracy of the city hall, and I don't think that there was total inflexibility with the council itself.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't suggest that, because once we said, well, no, let's go the other way, I did get lots of cooperation from city hall in the political sense.
How did you feel about their views when you suggested the fourth level?
Well, they
were cooperative then?
Generally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you felt that, you know, the SPOTA organization was capable of representing the area then?
Yeah, I didn't have any hang-ups about that at all.
Do you remember the Birmingham and Wood report, which was the consultant's report?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comments on that, on its recommendations, its frame of reference, or what it tried to do, what it couldn't do?
The only observation I had with that was that it itself probably had too much body to it, that it too could have locked what should have probably been a quite informal development. It may have locked it into another form of sort of planning bureaucracy. Matter of fact, I think the top of my head, I think that's about the only observation I did have to make about it.
Were you acquainted with the City Board of Admin report of January 71, which sort of dispensed with the Birmingham report? It sort of discussed why its recommendations couldn't be.
Yeah.
How did you feel at that time that the city said it could not and would not give grants, but may consider loans?
Well, we weren't hung up on the methods of this. So when we took the position that, look, we weren't, you know, if the rule book said one thing, we took the view that the Act, in fact, permitted a pretty flexible interpretation. So
if the city chose to interpret it one way, that was...
Yeah, we simply said, look, we, from our point of view, the Act does permit this, and let's not get it hung up on technical interpretation.
The city discussed the Birmingham Wood report internally without bringing towards the Strathcona Working Committee of the open. Why do you think they did this?
Well, I didn't even know they did.
Well, in the sense of their discussion, they sort of disregarded for what didn't bring up the full committee.
Yeah. I don't know.
During the negotiations then, which led to the signing of the July Agreement, sometimes known as the Purple Document.
Right.
What was the position of the province in relation to the goals of this? Again, a rehab program?
Totally, really. Yeah.
You sent a telegram on March 24th, 71, informing that you were prepared to provide legislation should there be any constitutional problems in the city. Why did you think that was necessary? And why did you send it?
Well, because again, this was thrown back and forth quite often, that uh-huh. they were deficient. Either we were deficient legislatively under the Housing Act, which I didn't feel we were.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we were, I have the Municipal Enabling and Validating Act in my own statute that I could have changed anyway. So we weren't hung up.
Could one say that the province could say to the city, you really can give a grant if you wish to, but if you don't even wish to give a loan, that's your prerogative.
That's right. Or if you feel you have a legislative hang-up, we'll validate one for you. We'll validate whatever you wish to do.
What would you say was the federal position, federal goals during this time of negotiations?
Well, I think by this time they were committed to our course of action.
The city changed its positions several times during the series of negotiations. For instance, on March 1st, they suggested a $1,000 limit grant loan if matched by the resident. And they noted that the federal and provincial people wanted a $3,000 grant limit. March 31st, they wanted a $3,000 limit if matched by the resident. By the middle of April, they said a $4,000 limit if matched $2,000 to $4,000. And the July 31st agreement is a $3,000 grant loan. What would you perceive, if you remember, the city was up to in doing these things? Were they
good
ambivalent?
My information that was coming to me at that time was that they were concerned that this might set a precedent for all of Vancouver. And at this time, what we said to them, well, look, we don't consider this. We've already agreed that this is a pilot project. So why get hung up on the problems that would be created by precedent?
During this period, how do you have any observations on SPOTA, the Strathcona organization, as an area of refugees? Did they present each time through the committee a sufficient feeling of what the people represented? How did they do in the negotiations? Were they strong in the negotiations?
Well, I didn't have to take that much part in that end of it, because if you wanted to find that end of it, if you asked Mr. Brown, he was the deputy. I mean,
he had
pretty broad terms of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So that directly as minister, I didn't get that much involved. I had just said, here's the ballpark, go and play it.
And from the province's position, then they were quite satisfied then with the July agreement, mm-hmm. which was signed.
Right.
There was an amendment made in December 71.
Right.
How did that come about and why?
Well, as the thing developed, and we had foreseen this, that, okay, so you get a framework to work in, and as the thing develops, maybe the first shot at it is not, you don't have to think it's tablets of stone. So my deputy, again, always had freedom to say, well, look, we've worked on this for so long, and it needs adjustment in the light of experience.
Better have gotten the direction of rehab would be an improvement versus the agreement. The first applications were started being processed in February, March of last year. From the feedback that you got during the rest of that year, how did you feel the program was being implemented? Did you feel that?
I didn't have any reports of anything having a bad time.
Did you feel that the goals were?
Yeah.
Couldn't be achieved.
As far as I was advised, the project was proceeding, and nobody had too many serious hang-ups.
As the rehab program was being implemented, or do you think that because of the rehab program there, as the way it has been implemented, do you think it's altered the future of that area, say in relation to land use or single-family residents?
Yeah, of course, I've always had a thing about the city of Vancouver. My feeling is that the city, for many reasons, made the wrong, basically the wrong decisions in trying to keep people out of certain neighborhoods in Vancouver. For example, Robson Street, living on Granville Street, or any other. In other words, why shouldn't people live down in the heart of the city?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything wrong with that. And to me, the whole sort of Upper Main area was no different than, say, what was happening with Robson. They could all have been revitalized and with a mixture of things taking place in them, and they would have been more exciting because of that. That was always my thing. I couldn't see any good reason to keep them apart out of downtown Vancouver.
If you could rewrite the program to have total authorship, would you make any changes?
You mean from day one?
From day one, right now. In relation to the program, whether the goals or the scope is wide enough, whether it's
Probably, but then, see, we were picking up some of the pieces that were already on the floor.
I'm just saying that if you were the main author, disregard the provincial and city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what would you have written into the program? Say, higher grant loans or certain things in administration or certain things in the powers of the administrative bodies, type of thing?
I, if you were to take a completely blank, I would say you'd have to confer a basic global budget on the area to start with, and then establish a four-level executive group who would have the authority to spend X number of dollars, and that. We'll take, say the total project was $5 million. I would establish something that was not too overstructured in terms of external input, fairly loose at the informal community input basis, not too formalized, and at, say, 6-month intervals. So they'd spent $1 million out of the five. I'd gone in at the end of 6 months and said, let's see what has been done to date. Mm-hmm. I think something like that.
Where the goals are being met or come close to being met.
Right.
It was, it's been suggested that the program, as it is in the way it is at being administered, is sort of, it's a very bureaucratic way. It's a program has been set, it's rehabilitation, it's physical rehabilitation. There's no input, or there wasn't written into the package there any provisions for social services, things like that.
Because we were really...
It could have been, given circumstances?
Oh yeah. Yes, but then that's when you come into the... That's when you would have come into the problem of overlapping source of funds, mostly source of funds, so that in order to do something that was broader than the sort of more physical aspects of the program, you would have had to deliberately say, okay, we'll take a global budget which will cross-hatch over several statutes, maybe, and even several government departments. I'm not saying it couldn't be done. All I'm saying is that we were narrowed into the National Housing Act approach, really. And they hadn't really moved too far away from that. No, I would agree that could be done.
From the province's side?
Yeah.
But from the federal side, you think it may have been difficult to interpret conditions of the federal money in relation to, say, a manpower training?
Oh, I'm sure it would have been.
Community center, yeah. Things like that. Yeah,
it would have been difficult to pull up various threads together.
Because right now they're realizing other contingency funds and surplus, there will be at least $400,000.
Yeah. No, I think it could have been, certainly, it's like anything else, if the terms of reference are broad enough, then what it amounts to simplify it is just to say, okay, we've got $5 million for this project, here it is, it encompasses the whole umbrella.
Would you, from what you said, I think you suggested that the committee, the four-level committee that's sort of administering this program right now, you would perhaps like to see it with a few more powers to evaluate and change the program as it went along.
I think there should be external evaluation as well.
And from the province's point of view, you wouldn't mind it going to social services or some other place.
No.
Excuse me, again.
Just a couple more. During 72 then, early 72 until August 30th, what then was your perception of SPOTA? Met had an obligation, or it was expected that would represent the area. Do you think the organization was doing that adequately?
I had no quarrel with that, and I had no kickback at all from, SPOTA or whatever committee is going into the neighborhood. Sometimes people say they represent an area and make presumptions that are not carried out when the thing goes along. But I had never, as minister, and from the point of view of what I was hearing from my deputy, throughout the program, I never had any comments from the community that they were not,
or
that SPOTA was not it.
Or
none of neither of the two.
And when, I think it was June or so, when Ambassador introduced the amendments to the National Housing Act, what were some of the province's plans in looking at the amendments? I'm thinking in particular the new neighborhood improvement program and such, which would have had similar...
Well, for all practical purposes, as far as British Columbia was concerned, we would have never gone into any further urban renewal in any sense of the old. We would have said, look, we want to use, if this is broad enough to interpret this way, we want to uplift the infrastructure of this neighborhood in cooperation with the local government. That would have been a governmental activity, and we want to go in the joint program on the rehabilitation of the existing buildings, and that may have, in some instances, involved removal in spots. But that would have been that certainly was our program. That was our position right from day one on urban renewal, right since 1964.
Were there other urban rehab areas under consideration besides Strathcona, and how far did those plans get?
Once again, when you get around with the city of Vancouver,
it's up to the city to make an issue.
No, but there were problems there because there was Strathcona online for a number of years.
Uh-huh.
Now here in the city of Victoria, we were taking on this downtown area from the buildings right through to the Johnson Street Bridge. That was one. There were a number of smaller municipalities, Trail, basically along the river behind the main street. That was another one. There were a number of other municipalities who were smaller, like Vernon was talking about neighborhood uplift of their downtown area. We were essentially committed in principle to all of them.
Mm-hmm. And you were the one who encouraged the four-level discussions,
mm-hmm.
and which also set up a four-level administrative body,
mm-hmm.
to carry out the program. I would then assume also the fourth level should actively participate in the evaluation.
Yeah. But I think what fourth level should. But I think it's a two-tiered deal. The evaluation, if you're doing the thing yourself, you got to have some four people who are pushing the button, right? Now, somebody external to them has to, when I talk about evaluation, the same people who do the job can't evaluate their own work.
Right.
No.
This is why I don't know if you were realizing that when I first mentioned you that SPOTA did get quite by a grant.
Mm-hmm.
You were aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's about it? Any other comments you wish to add?
No, I think it was a useful effort.
Okay. Again, with when did you become was your title Deputy Minister?
Of Municipal Affairs?
Yes. When did you become Deputy Minister?
54.
And what was your background before?
Well, I worked in the Bureau of Economics when I was in college from 45 to 52.
So,
but in that period, I acted as Secretary of Research on the Goldenberg Royal Commission on Municipal Affairs. So that's how I got.
So from 54 to 72, then you observed all the initial federal initiatives
in that had to deal with women's balance and housing.
What were some of the programs during the 50s and 60s?
Well, basically, the one program was surgery programs. There was a winter works program. Then, of course, there was a housing program, which in that case involved a three-level office, both three levels financially. The other programs obviously had the approval of the province. The province itself, generally speaking, was not involved. Although, in the case of winter works, 1 or 2 years, the province said, okay, we will make available an additional sum of money for employees if you take them off the welfare rule,
What about the urban renewal schemes in those days?
Well, the urban renewal scheme, of course, came naturally under the National Housing Act, per se. The initial proposition was to Strathcona, which was the first urban renewal scheme. Initially, it involved a study to be sure the study and so on was initiated by the city. The city, as being the level of government responsible for communities, decided through its staff and so on that that area was not undergoing a new development. Certainly not going to be new development in other parts of the city.
Sort of. No, it's okay.
And then your fear is not happening, then the question is why? Supposition is
the role of the province and the federal government would be to, unless there was any great arguments that they would go along with.
Yeah, generally, as far as the province is concerned, in that period, it was largely an experiment. We didn't know whether that was the right answer or not. It appeared that it might be that answer. And not knowing, not having any other grounds for along with it. In other words, they both approved the project and they made a contribution in cash. By about the time that the citizens, particularly through SCOTA, came on the scene, by that time, we were already
Something was wrong?
Something was wrong.
Dan Campbell became minister in 1964. What happened when he took office? Did he come in some different plans or different views?
No, I don't want to make it sound as if that isn't quite true. He came at the juncture when things were clearly not working out as he anticipated. Secondly, the fact that he was new, he wasn't committed to the previous undertaking as his predecessor might have been.
And who's that?
Black, Wesley Black. So he could come in a sense with a free mind. I think it was a very fortunate juncture that he had a chance to take a look at it and to recognize that the proposal or that this thing was not working.
This is quite early.
Yeah, very early. I mean, he's a very bright and catches on very, very quickly. He quickly agreed that the thing wasn't right. It was not a person with good reason.
What did you think of Paul Harry? What did you think of his task force?
Well, I'm afraid I have a rather jaundiced view on some of his task force. I think they were a substitute for really sitting down and thinking about it. There's no use me going to the man in the street and saying, what do you think you should do, and what's the man in the street, and what do you think you should do. I think you should sit down and think about it. Sit down. And then kind of accordingly. Rather than, you see, one of the problems that we face in Canada over the last 15, 20 years, we've tended to borrow programs from the States. They had a real first, and that was the thing to do. So Ottawa picked it up, and that was the thing to do here. Now, the rather annoying thing about these American programs that we borrowed, usually about the time we borrowed, that's about the time they're leaving, but we don't cotton on to that much later.
Did you say that when he held his task force, the data really was there, or it just wasn't getting through to him, or it was politically expedient for him to do this task force, or already had the conclusions ahead of time? Or?
Well, I don't know. I can't. You're asking me to say what was in Hellier's mind, and I really can't say that. I really don't know. I think I met him. I think he's a very nice man, and intelligent man too. It's a question of how you want to examine it. There's two ways, you know. You can have briefs and listen to briefs and so on. Now, perhaps my experience with Goldenberg, which went back in 1946, on his provincial minister. Goldenberg was a very eminent Canadian from Montreal. He was the Royal Commissioner. Now, I was his secretary, so I saw all the briefs. We had briefs from all over the province. Mm-hmm. Now, there was only one brief in the whole bunch that in fact provided any useful information. And it's probably something we would have found anyway. I'm simply saying it, I'm not trying to run down what other people said or say, but I question whether or not that's a substitute for really sitting down and thinking about things yourself.
Hellier called for the cessation of funds for public housing in the middle of this program already. But coincidence, and that also coincided with the federal desire to cut down on spending.
Mm-hmm.
Could we say that was fortunate, or you could have done it anyway?
Well, the task force may have served him a political purpose. Mm-hmm. That's why I can't say the task force are necessarily good or bad per se.
It may have served him a political purpose, perhaps justifying doing changing directions. To admit they were wrong. And then sometimes they pass the problem to somebody else to wrestle with, even though they perhaps could or should have the answers anyway. But I have to say that these sort of task force and so on may serve a political purpose. I don't think they necessarily serve an operational purpose.
When Robert Andrews became minister in 69, May 69, did you have any expectations or as to what he was going to do? Or?
Well, I'll be perfectly frank with you. I never did understand Robert Andrews.
Okay. You had focused in on Strathcona, I guess, for quite a few years in before beginnings of SCOTA.
Yes. Well, you see, unfortunately, that area became the area where we tried the rather book-type urban renewal.
What would you
we
say?
We followed the text.
During those days, the 50s, what were the representative organizations, Chinese organizations, or any groups in those days?
Bob Fossum and I had a visit. Once we used to come that place from representatives, I think, of the Chinese community, these days, David, I can't remember which groups they were, about their opportunity to come back in or stay in, as the case may be. And both Bob and I, the fact that this was both desirable and we should. That we should be able to do it.
But what time period was this?
Well, this is before, let's see, 59. Was 59 the time when the study was completed, I think? They were getting around to entering into the agreement around 60 or 61, about right. I think I'm pretty close. Well, somewhere in that period, when it was clear that there was going to be an urban renewal, somewhere in that period, they met with Mr. Clausen and I, and, on behalf of support the Chinese community, some part of the community anyway, and both brought up the fact that we hoped that they would be accommodated there on the land that was clear.
You couldn't remember any names?
No, I don't. No, I'm sorry, I can't.
Any organization?
I can't remember. Mr. Clausen might remember if you ask him.
Then by the middle of 69 then, what about Strathcona then and representation, SPOTA, or other organizations?
Well, you see, two things had happened in the meantime. Before they came on the scene, one, we had been unsuccessful in selling the land to anybody for redevelopment.
Because the price was too high?
No.
No one was interested?
Nobody. Well, there's one firm from Eastern Canada, fiddled around with it for a year. He didn't come back and say, would you lower the price? Because after all, we were only going to sell it for $100,000. It couldn't get much cheaper than that. But if he had come back and said to us, I can't stand $100,000, but I can stand $50,000, I wouldn't have been too bad.
How much time are you talking about?
Oh, we're talking about a whole block. But when obviously then the price wasn't the thing that was holding him up. And this is when I first twigged to the fact that price is not the problem on this urban renewal. That's when I realized that the original proposition was wrong. The original proposition, the original theory was wrong. That's when I finally realized that the original theory wouldn't work. Now, the other problem is, of course, if it was going to be used, the government was going to use it, the whole thing. And we were just going to have one mass of public housing, which, from a sociological point of view, already was obviously wrong, too. So, we're already conditioned to hear and to respond to SCOTA and any other group that might come along.
SCOTA, after its formation, sent a couple of briefs to City Hall. What I'm just trying to gauge now is how you perceive at that time, this is about middle of 69,
it's told as that every representative, whether other organizations, transport association.
You mean, well, how did we happen to pick Spoda rather than somebody else?
Right.
Well,
did they?
Well, let's put it this way. Spoda came to us.
Uh-huh.
Now, failing any indication that anybody else was representing here, we accepted Spoda. Uh-huh. Now, I remember about the second or third meeting, that is the meeting, four-party meeting, you know, uh-huh. the negotiating period, I remember representatives of the city saying that they didn't think Spoda
was representative.
Was representative. And I said, until I have clear evidence that
otherwise
they're the representative. Mm-hmm. I also said, if somehow or other the thing goes south, mm-hmm. following their advice, I will simply put the blame on them.
What would the leadership of Spoda?
Well, I had no way of knowing that the leadership was other than what it maintained it was, that the representative.
I was thinking in terms of whether it was centralized in one or two persons, or they seemed to have a variety of resource people to...
Well, no, Harry Cohn and Shirley Chang pretty heavily bore the burden. It's true, there were other people, and then of course they brought in some Occidentals on occasions to help them and so on. But basically, Harry Kahn, Shirley Chang, and probably one or two others in that group, they carried pretty much the load.
Does it really matter whether Harry Kahn was close to the Liberal Party?
I didn't even know he was. I didn't even know he was. I was not aware of what his private personal politics might be.